Sir, we should be just about starting now, and I want to welcome you all to our class on the Court of Wands. It's kind of an interesting thing doing court cards, and they're different than the others. And for me, they're particularly interesting because they combine a lot of different aspects, a lot of different levels. And they do it in such an economical way that every card is subtle to the point of being confusing. And I find teaching the court cards an interesting challenge because, you know, you can never get enough in one class. You can never teach the whole thing in a single class. So we can't do that tonight either. You'll be aware of that before we begin. We are not going to cover the subject. And we're going to put a handkerchief on a dining room table and call it a tablecloth. But what we will do is we'll open the door to this material. We'll peek through it. We'll see what we can see. And by the time the class is done, we should come away with more than we began by hopefully quite a bit. But on the other hand, just before I go off on that, I could conceivably be projecting here. How many of you actually find the court cards easy? Easy to interpret, direct, you know, in their meaning, not complicated at all? Anybody, generally speaking, have that experience with them?
No, they're always the toughest for me.
They're what?
They're always the toughest.
Yeah, well, I have heard that said by many people, but occasionally when I say that, people say, I know what they mean, I know what they're about. So I'm just wondering if that was the experience, you know, of anybody here tonight.
I find them tough.
Okay.
For people that have never seen them before, I find that these they don't show very much.
Well, they don't, actually. The pictures are very formal, especially in the weight deck. And some of the other decks, they are more pictorial, more artistic, more dramatic, but not necessarily more accurate. They, as usual with decks that are done where the intention is primarily an artistic one, or where the intention is to express a personal opinion or a personal agenda, the court cards are expressive of those things. Which doesn't mean they're devoid of symbolism, it just means the symbolism expresses the particular point of view of a particular artist or deck creator. The weight deck, which as you know is by this time is made up of specifically and carefully tailored symbolic parts. It's almost modular. I mean, a red feather here and a red feather there. I mean, almost the same thing. A suit of armor in death, a suit of armor in the emperor, and a suit of armor on a knight have very similar meanings. The parts are put together in such a way that they reflect a very long, very old, and pretty tried and true tradition that works together very well. And in the case of the major arcana, in the case of the minors, the numbers. For the most part, those visual symbolic elements tell you what you need to know in order to get pretty much the basic idea of what the cards are about just by looking, so that a person who doesn't know tarot at all, who has not had any schooling or doesn't care, can work with them in what is called an intuitive manner. That is, the cards evoke in you with the responses they're supposed to evoke, and you get the general idea, and you can work with them without formal training. But in the case of the court cards, it's not so easy. They work on so many levels at the same time, and they refer to so many things simultaneously, that their pictorial qualities are deceptive. They are simple and almost enigmatic, to the point of being almost useless. And they are so not pretty, and they are so intentionally bland in a way, or non-suggestive, that you can't do an awful lot with them in terms of, well, this is a blonde lady with blue eyes, with a certain kind of temperament. It isn't so easy to do that with a weight deck, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of people don't like to use this deck. But once you get the hang of it, and once you see how the parts are put together, when you see the structural connections between the levels, all of a sudden the thing opens up, and it's really an amazing procedure. So what we're going to do tonight is start the process in a kind of an informal way. And what I would like you to do first is take the cards, the four cards of the Court of Wands, and just shuffle them up. And when you're finished shuffling them, which obviously shouldn't take too long, just put them face down on the table. You can put them in a stack or, you know, lay them out, you know, however you want. But we're going to look at them. They're going to should be face down so you don't know which one is which. And now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to volunteer somebody. It's one of the things I really enjoy doing. When I was in the service, I was always on the receiving end of the volunteering. Now I'm on the giving end, and it gives me a certain amount of pleasure. My instincts as a tyrant come out here. Let's see. Martha, you're here, are you not?
Yes.
Good. Well, I'll start with you because you're relatively new to us. And,
right, but I'm the one that said that they really don't say very much.
Good. So much the better. That's all the much better. So what I want you to do is to pick one card and turn it face up and tell us which one it is.
Okay. The Queen.
Good. The Queen. The Queen is a lovely card. So the question now is this. Now here you've got this card in front of you and you know that it means something. And you look at it and you can get something out of it, but it's a little tricky. What I want you to be aware of when you look at this card. By the way, guys, what I would like you to do is everybody look for the Queen and find it and turn it face up. And after you've turned the Queen face up, turn any other cards that you've turned face up, turn them back face down. So you only have the Queen looking at you face up. We can pay attention to one card at a time that way. Okay? Imagine that doesn't take too long either, so we should be able to go forward now. So what I would like you to do is to realize something, which you may or you may not. Well, I'm going to tell you what I think you should be realizing, and you tell me if it's occurred to you before and whether it's a standard piece of understanding for you. My sense, and what I work with all the time, is that every card in the tarot deck, every single one, is working in you all the time. Every card in the deck is always relevant to your life, at this moment and any other moment. Every single one. No matter what card you draw, it will have something to say, something useful, something true, something interesting and different, something you should know. Any card you pick, all the time. This is my perception of how, the answer to the secret of how it is that tarot is always on the money. I don't care what card you draw, I don't care what spread you use, I don't care what question you ask, the cards are always going to be appropriate. There's no way it can't be. So this is my feeling, and I want to know from you, Martha, if you either think that way, or if you get a sense that that is an accurate statement, or if you more or less don't, you're not comfortable with it.
Well, that made me think about your comment last week when you said, the first thing that comes to mind is, that's fine, it evokes something in me, in relation to me, what happens if I'm reading it for someone else,
mm-hmm.
and I need to be focusing on that person and not what comes up for me, so...
Good, but then you would realize that while whatever card has turned up for you, for example, all of us are now looking at the Queen of Wands. So, now there's a whole bunch of different people in this class. Everybody's life is different, and everybody's personality is different. Everybody's past lives, everybody's spirit, everybody's everything is different. Nevertheless, we're all looking at this card, and no matter who's looking, no matter who I pick to talk at this point, the card would refer to them. And it would refer to them as they are right this moment. So what I would like you to do, Martha, if you can,
right.
I would like you to tell me, what does the Queen of Wands say about your life right this moment?
About my life?
Your experience at this moment. What's life? What's the Queen of? Where is the Queen of Wands in you? What is she saying about you right now?
Okay. Well, she is looking. She's expecting. She's waiting for something to unfold. It's I see expectations.
What do you think that the Queen of Wands in particular might be looking for? I mean, she has a predilection. She would tend to look for certain things. What do you think she would be looking for in you or in your life at this point?
Results, unfoldment.
What kind of unfoldment? Remember the Queen, I mean, this, what you're saying could conceivably be true of any card in the deck. If we were looking at the Eight of Swords, she too could be looking at you with expectation of unfoldment of some kind, but the Queen of Wands has certain specific things, certain
okay.
qualities.
I'm facing new things. It's new pursuits. that expectation, and I see it more like she's holding that flower.
Mm-hmm. What do you think newness has to do with her?
Well, with me.
Or with what? Why would she be looking at something? Why would she be particularly interested in something new about you? Are you expecting something new?
Well, Walt, you asked me to put it in relation to me, so I just started a new job, blah, blah, blah.
Ah, that's okay. Cool.
So, you know, what is, you know, she's holding that wand in her hand.
Mm-hmm.
She's holding the flower. That's like new expectations towards a new path,
okay.
New avenue, new pursuits.
Would you like to know what that flower is about? It's an interesting flower. You pick that out, and I mean, the Queen of Wands has lots of symbolism in it. And when a person is asked this question, like, "What is this card about for you?" usually there'll be a reference to one or another of the visual symbols, and that usually is a key. Now, the sunflower in the Greek word for sunflower is heliotrope, and heliotrope means to follow the sun or that which follows the sun. And as you know, wands is a suit that's connected with the element of fire. And it's quality of sun. This is a sun queen. The sunflower is a version of that. And of course, the sunflower also has to do with the sun and fire as a symbol of growth. Notice her crown. You see how her crown is made up of there's a kind of green leafy quality to it? Is there anybody who can't see that?
Yeah.
Each of the crowns is different. On each of the kings and queens, every crown in the tarot deck is different and represents something slightly different. And then the Queen of Wands, her crown, her symbol of authority, has to do with growing life. And the sunflower in one hand, you notice the sunflower itself is round. And in her other hand, you notice she's holding the wand. And the wand is the scepter. And the sunflower is the orb. And the orb and scepter, the round and the straight of a matter, those are things that can be found as the symbols of authority in any monarch. If you look at the emperor in the tarot deck, you'll find that he holds a wand and scepter. You'll find the wand and scepter in most monarchs, and all the kings, like the king of cups, for example, in this deck will hold a scepter and orb. So for the Queen of Wands, she is showing her authority by holding the sunflower as a form of authority, and it's the form of authority that has to do with growing life. There's another interesting thing about it. In addition to being the sun and the source of life and the source of authority, the sunflower has another interesting quality. It has, actually, come to think of it, the word for sunflower, another word for sunflower in Greek is clytie, and it's spelled C-L-Y-T-I-E. And clytie means the great one. And from the word clytie, which is the word for sunflower, that's the root, the source of the word, the modern word clitoris. So you should be aware that the Queen of Wands is an intensely sexual being. And a lot of her power derives from sexuality. Is that in any way a surprise?
Yeah. I was thinking about work.
I know. But the interesting thing, remember that all of Wands has to do with the handling and the perception and the uses of energy. And work like life is in a sense a distillation of pure energy. The Queen of Wands has certain qualities, and she is among them the four court cards of Wands. She is the most disciplined worker by far. She's the one who gets things done, the one who expects her energy to bear fruit. She's the one who is extremely insistent that things go right and go well. And if you knew somebody who could be described as a Queen of Wands, you would expect that person to be able to handle the details of any project and make sure that it was done to perfection. The Queen of Wands can handle a banquet. The Queen of Wands can handle a party. The Queen of Wands can handle a political gathering. The Queen of Wands can put together the halftime show at a football game. The Queen of Wands is a great producer of movie films. The Queen of Wands can handle a million details and get it done. She's really great at getting the job done. There is a distinct affinity between the Queen of Wands and work.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll take that.
That sounds like it came like a large shower of unexpected material. When you look at the Queen of Wands, do you see any of that? Can you see it by looking at her? Because you may not. Look at her carefully and see if you can see any of that in the picture. Probably not. All right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let you think about that for a minute. And I'm going to ask, let me see. Anne-Marie, when you look at the Queen of Wands, find her in yourself. Remember that she is there as an expression of you, not just of a detail of your life. She's an expression of who you are. And she's working in you now, and she peers through your eyes at every moment, even though you may not be aware of her. But when you look, when you pay attention, can you find her?
Yes, I can. And I can find her, and also I need to magnify her.
Do it for me. Tell me about it.
Well, I think she represents a sexuality which I once was much more comfortable with and was much more a part of my life and is pretty much submerged now, even though I'm aware of it, but it's almost like I'm not the same person I used to be, and she represents certain aspects of that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think she represents certain levels of handling things that I believe I did better at some points in the past, too.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
So I think when we first turned over the card,
mm-hmm.
I was looking at it, you know, like a quick impression for myself, and my thought was it's a message of self-reclamation.
Now, in order for it to be truly a message of self-reclamation, it has to be something that comes alive. If it doesn't actually begin to work, if the Queen of Wands does not claim her rightful heritage, it's just nice words.
Right.
So now, if you, in order for any card to suddenly come alive for you and stop being simply a picture on a piece of paper, something has to happen. There's a magical on switch. And the on switch is not something that's going to stay on unless you practically, physically keep it on. If after class and over the next few days, if it's something that you would wish to actually happen, if you want it to have an effect for you, contemplate the Queen of Wands. Think about what you just said. Sleep on it. Ponder it. Write about it if you journal at all. Don't let it disappear from your mind. By focusing attention, by pointing the wand at something, you bring it to life. This is precisely what the magician does with his wand, with his finger actually. The wand draws down the power from heaven. The finger, by pointing, brings things to life. And the finger pointing is the symbol of attention. So if you really would like this to be so, point the finger of your attention at the Queen of Wands and make her live. Just a little piece of advice. Good.
It's an excellent piece of advice.
Yeah, that, by the way, that's the way you can, if you wish, use any card in tarot. If there is some quality or some aspect of a card that is important to you and that you would wish for yourself, if you wish to give it to yourself as a gift, or for that matter, if you were doing a reading and wanted to give it as a gift to somebody else, all you need to do to bring it to life is point the finger of attention at it and keep your finger pointed at it. And the longer you keep it pointed, the more living it will get until it finally has a life of its own and you can point away from it and it'll still stay alive. How long that takes is different for different people. But good. Good. Peggy, you there?
Yep.
The invisibility cloak is rent once again. I'm going to add, because you have such an interestingly different take on this thing than either. I mean, your style is different from each of the people who have spoken before. The Queen of Wands, my feeling is, the Queen of Wands would have a certain power for you.
Oh, yeah. I'm really drawn to her. If nothing more from the fact that she has a black cat sitting in front of her.
Oh, that's so interesting. And what's the black cat about? Do you know? There's something quite specific.
Magic and mystery.
Absolutely.
And her knees are open, which means she's open to new things, to she's willing to accept knowledge, willing to accept, just open to new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably sitting on lions, but to me they look like sphinxes.
Uh-huh.
And who have the riddle. And you have to answer the riddle to pass through the gates.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the idea of, to me the card, part of it is curiosity, receptivity, studying things.
Good. Let me tell you a little bit about that black cat. You may find it interesting. you notice on her robe she has a brooch.
Yes.
Pin, and that pin is a leopard pin. It's supposed to be the head of a leopard.
Even though it looks like a chipmunk.
Yeah, I know. The actual rendering of it, that's where you see a chipmunk, but now you know it's a leopard.
It's supposed to be a leopard.
Right, so by a simple act of magic, I simply say it and it transforms into a leopard. So from now on, when you look at that, that's what you will see.
I still see a chipmunk.
Your eyes are heavy, sleepy, it's a leopard. Anyway, that's a leopard. And each one of the court cards has been assigned by the Golden Dawn, whose tradition we follow as best we can, has been assigned a crest. And the crest for the Queen of Wands is the leopard. And the black cat sitting at her feet is the leopard transformed into a servant. The wildness and power, the cunning and abilities of the leopard become her personal abilities and her personal servant. It is, the black cat, of course, has a heritage all of its own. It's a witch's familiar. It's a familiar of magicians in general. And it is usually thought to be a shapeshifter and something of a sorcerer in its own right. And, of course, you want to stay out of a black cat's path, which is, well known. When you stay out of the path of something, I mean, you just really don't want to fool with that thing. And you don't want to fool with a black cat. And basically, the black cat is a symbol of the Queen of Wands' particular qualities as a sorceress. She is not simply a lady, nor simply a queen, nor even a sexual power. She is a sorceress. She is capable of making things happen by magical intent. She's a leader. She's a mover and shaker. She's intelligent, courageous, and proud. And that black cat is a symbol of all of those things: intelligence, courage, pride, leadership, and the ability to make things happen. And, of course, it also is a symbol of the Queen of Wands in general, because the Queen of Wands is cat-like. She can sit patiently like a cat or spring like a cat. She's soft and she's strong. She's relaxed and she's alert. She's sensitive and she's cruel. All those things together. Now, when you look at this picture, you see this kind of relatively square-jawed, not particularly pretty rendition. And a lot of people don't see her sexuality. They don't understand it from this picture. When you look at this, Peggy in particular, when you're looking at this, do you see the things that I'm talking about, or are they hidden in the picture?
And they also see the potential strength and power behind fire and water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And when you say fire and water, that brings up, of course, a whole other matter, which many of you may know and many of you may not. I'll ask you, actually, if you know why the Queen of Wands is associated with both fire and water. Anybody? Anybody know? Well, you mentioned it, Peggy. Do you know?
The Queens, I didn't want to pop in.
Please.
The Queens all represent water.
Yes, they do.
And she is, and the Wands are fire.
Absolutely. She is a combination of two elements, fire and water. And all of the court cards in every suit are a combination of elements. I'll tell you this now, and you might want to write this down for future reference, if you don't already know. All of the queens are connected with the element of water. So whichever queen you see will always be connected with the element of water.
Just because they're female, or?
Yes, precisely. because there is an association, there's a Kabbalistic association between the female and the element of water. The queen. Now, there's two females in the deck. There is the queen and also the page, who in other decks is called the princess. But the mature female, the mature woman, the womanly form in tarot, the woman per se, is considered water, and the cup is her primary signal or primary suit, and that's because the woman is a vessel. The woman holds energy. The woman gives shape and form to things, and that's why she is given the suit of the cup and the element of water. So all the queens, regardless of suit, are connected with the element of water. Now, there's people who could argue that from an intuitive point of view, I know, and there are always a variety of opinions. And I think it is the most, of all the different attributions of rank to suit and element, the queen being connected with water is probably one that just about every tradition accepts pretty easily. Whether you're a Wiccan or a ceremonial magician or, you know, an Arthurian or, yeah, I don't know what, doesn't really make any difference. They all pretty much agree on that. Now, of course, you have, it's a queen, but it's also a queen of a particular suit. And wands, as we know, is connected with fire. So you have the shape, the form of this combination of elements is the queen. The form of this element is water. The force that fills the vessel is fire. This is water of fire. This is the watery form of fire, the watery aspect of fire. It's a combination of those two things. And,
a quick question. If I am to follow your logic, and this card doesn't evoke that sexuality in me and I meditate on it, is it too logic then to say then there could be a problem with my sexuality now?
No.
I see no sexuality in her.
Right.
She
and the reason.
Like so serious.
Okay. Now, the reason why you don't see it is because of the picture.
The picture.
Right. The picture is drawn in a certain way, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the class, in the weight deck, the pictures are not given, what would you call them, mythical, beautiful qualities. In many decks, you'll see the queens and other feminine figures done in beautiful, long red tresses and beautiful robes and, you know, and shining green or blue eyes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of.
How do some people, including you, pick up on her sexuality?
The reason is because I know the elements and I know this and I know the system behind it and I know what she's supposed to be. The reason why the court cards are ineffective as pictures in this particular deck is because there is no picture that I can think of. There is no image of a female form, and no image of a woman that can simultaneously capture all of these qualities. And so what they did was they gave her a slightly abstract template-like quality. She's a woman, you can see that, but she combines power, authority, magic, sex, and a variety of other things all at the same time, which are very difficult to render in a picture. At least this is my explanation of it. Remember, this deck was drawn by a woman. It was drawn by a woman who had, you know, a very strong background in both magical practice and in the theater. And she knew costume. In fact, she was a costume and stage designer. So she knew her stuff. And somehow or other, this was the symbol, this was the figure she came up with to assign all of these qualities to. And I'm telling you what is at the root of a tradition. I'm not deriving this stuff from the picture. Where there is a specific reference to a quality, like, for example, the wand itself is a purely phallic form. It's intended to be phallic. The element of fire itself is masculine and is intended to be the most purely sexual masculine form. She's holding that masculine phallus in one hand, and she's holding the feminine sexuality of the clitoris in the other hand, and she's got them both. So that gives her a very strong mix of fire and water, a very strong mix of male and female. You might remember that the six-pointed star, the seal of Solomon, which is a great magical form, is a mixture of an upward-pointing triangle and a downward-pointing triangle. The upward-pointing triangle is the triangle of fire. The downward-pointing triangle is a triangle of water. One is male, one is female, and it's the mating or the mingling of fire and water, male and female, that creates the entire universe. And what she is a mix, is a particular mixture of fire and water, which gives her a combination, a kind of it's a male female combination, rather than a purely female combination. So if there is sexuality here, and there is, the sexuality is a rather masculine sexuality. It's a rather intensely aggressive and intense active sexuality, rather than a passive receptive kind, which is maybe one reason why she is shown the way she's shown, rather than being the beautiful, you know, feminine figure. Now, I don't know if any of that makes any sense at all, but this is part of what her powers are, part of the reason for the picture. I mentioned at the beginning that we are not going to be able to cover everything. There's no possible way we can go into all of the reason behind everything and all of the aspects, even on the surface. So these are things that may be things to think about, possibly to disagree with. If you do disagree with them, or demur, or are not comfortable with them, let them simply be. Think about them. Hold them in mind. Test them against what you come across as you learn more later on your own in other places. Test them against your own perceptions, and don't let the pictures get in the way. As you change from deck to deck, the pictures change all the time. The tarot remains the same. So if you wish to, change the picture in your mind. Make the woman look different when you see her with your eyes closed, and she may reflect something different for you. I don't know, was I too emphatic with that? Was I beating up on you? I didn't mean to. No? Who, by the way, had asked that? I wasn't sure who it was who was asking me that about the queen's sexuality.
We just said that nothing...
That it didn't reflect your sense of your own sexuality.
Right, me. It's Martha.
Okay, well now, Martha, the interesting thing is that there are many forms of sexuality represented in tarot, and this particular form might not be yours.
Okay.
It's not the only kind of sexuality there is by a long stretch.
Okay,
thank you. Okay, good. Anyway, let's kind of... Oh, let me give you a little bit more of the standard symbolism and some of the attributions. One of the things that... And you can write this stuff down. You'll find it useful. Every card in tarot, as you know, has both an esoteric title and an astrological attribution, which are useful in getting a sense of what the card's about. All the queens are cardinal signs. So the Queen of Fire is cardinal fire, and cardinal fire is Aries. So the astrological attribution for the Queen of Wands is Aries. Now I'm telling you this, and I'm saying, oh, she is this. You will come across books and teachers and commentaries all over the place where this one will say this and the other one will say the other, but this is fairly standard, and it's a system that works well in the context of what the tarot school does, and it is consistent. Inwardly consistent with all of the other things that we work with, and as long as a symbol is part of a jigsaw puzzle which hangs together and creates a useful and powerful image, you can probably use it. Bear in mind that there are other ways of looking at this thing. This isn't meant to be dogmatic. It's just useful. So from the point of view of the system that we are using, which is a Golden Dawn system, it's not the only one, by the way. There are other Golden Dawn systems. I mean, Crowley had his own system, and there are a couple of others. Paul Foster Case had a system. Different people have different systems, even inside the Golden Dawn, but this is one of them. And Aries is cardinal fire, and cardinal fire is the queen.
So
the esoteric...
Golden,
huh?
Which Golden Dawn are we?
We're using Waite's deck, so we're using Waite's attributions. And although, again, there are some disagreements as to what even Waite meant about various things. One of the tricky parts of this is when you're dealing with attributions, you can always find an authority who says the opposite of what you say, no matter what you say. I mean, magicians have a love of arguing with each other. And everybody who thinks they know anything they've got to stick their oar in and come up with something different. This is a fairly standard system. It's one that works well. All I'm letting you know is not to be surprised if you see other attributions here and there. This one works rather well, and you'll see how it goes as we go through the various cards of this court. and I give you the attributions, the astrological attributions, you'll see how it works. And you can determine for yourself whether you wish to use this system or not. I'm giving it to you simply because you'll find it useful. So if we assume that the cardinal signs, that the queens represent the cardinal signs, then this is fire, and we have cardinal fire, which is Aries. The esoteric title of this card is the Queen of the Thrones of Fire. I'll give you a chance to write that down. The Queen of the Thrones of Fire.
Finally, it's not a card that is the Lord of something?
Well, actually, no. The Lord, the cards that are the Lords of things are all the numbered cards. Here, we're working with something more specific, and we stay within gender.
There's only one woman, for heaven's sake.
Well, actually, that's not true. The pages are also... The pages are supposed to be princesses.
Okay.
And they are in the among the court cards, one level of the court cards is the family. They represent both... Simultaneously, they represent the social order. They represent psychological attributions. They represent magical elements, and they represent the family, and a few other things as well. In the family, in the familial arrangement, for our purposes, the knight is the father, the biological father. The king is the son, who is his son, and the result of the union between the knight and the queen. And the queen is the mother, and the page is the daughter. So we have a father, a mother, a son, and a daughter, which is the standard nuclear family. And by the way, it is out of this arrangement, which is a purely Kabbalistic arrangement. You may not know this, but it is. It deals entirely with the tree of life. This arrangement of father, mother, son, and daughter, which is the source, is the symbolic and spiritual source of the West's idea of a nuclear family. And if anybody ever asked you, what is the value? Who cares about the nuclear family? There's lots and lots of other paradigms for a family. Of course, there are. This particular one is derived specifically and straight right out of the esoteric tradition. It's a magical family. Not four wives and 27 concubines and one husband and 57 children with all of their servants, which is another, you know, the extended family for a variety of things, with all the cousins and aunts and uncles and grandfathers and stuff. Which is, you know, a whole other way of doing things. This is something that comes out of a specific mystical and spiritual tradition, not just something invented arbitrarily by some idiot guy in the 19th century. So anyway, where were we? then as far as the elements that she consists of, we did mention that she's water of fire. And the water part is the form. The form is the shape of the rank. The rank, the person, is the shape that the energy takes. So the shape is the form, and the watery form is the heart, the feeling, and the power of attraction. Now somewhere along the line we have
a lot of static,
which means that somebody's probably on a cell phone and has probably gotten a channel that's staticky. So if you would do me the favor of hanging up and redialing, that would solve the problem for all of us, whoever's got that, the cell phone. If you can even hear me, you may not even be able to hear me if the static is bad enough. Well, guys, there it goes. Okay. So anyway, again, water as a form is a combination of heart, the feelings or emotions, and the power of attraction. And the force, which is the force of fire in this case, is spirit, intuition, and energy. And that's the combination you have here. A spirited heart, intuitive feelings, and the energy of attraction. All of those things combine in the Queen of Wands. There's a lot of other things, but we've already spent as much time as we can take on her, and as I said, we're only going to be able to do a little piece at a time. Good. So how about taking the Queen of Wands, put it aside, and all of you shuffle your cards again so you don't know where they are, which ones the other ones are. And let me see. Debbie,
mm-hmm.
Pick a card from the remaining three. What do we got?
Knight of Wands.
The Knight. Ah, the Knight is a fun one. The Knight is the most fun one of the group. That's really interesting. Okay, I say the Knight is the most fun one of the group, and you've got the chore of letting us find out where in you the Knight of Wands can be found, and who he is, and what he says, and what he is for you, and what he represents for you, and what he's talking about in you now. All of those things. Can you do that?
Well, the horses is in action.
Mm-hmm.
It's so there's activity. The salamanders are also a fiery symbol. So
why? Why are the element the salamanders fiery symbols? Anybody know? Go ahead.
What do those salamanders really look like? Aren't they? Well, actually, they kind of have fire. I mean, they're black on here, but they're not really black.
Well, you know what? You know that? Remember that leopard brooch that looked like a chipmunk?
Yeah.
Right. Well, we got a salamander. We got a black little lizard here that I guarantee you is a salamander. You may not know it's a salamander by looking at it, but you just have to take my word for it. It is a salamander. And
I read two things that connected them with fire.
Yeah.
One was that they were an alchemical symbol, but it didn't go into more than that. And the other was that salamanders hide in rotten logs, and in old logs, and if you start a fire, they run out really quickly. So people actually thought they were coming from the fire.
Absolutely, you got it. Both things are true.
In the logs. Also, they're a sort of magical orangey color.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. I thought there was like some orangey.
Right. Exactly.
Stuff fiery.
That's
looking
true.
Quality.
That's
they're
true. They are. So the interesting thing, both of those things are true, and the substance, the source of the legend about salamanders is precisely the fact that they run out of rotten logs when you put them in the fire and start to burn them, and it looks like they're coming out, and it looks like because they have the orange color and they're coming out of the fire, it looks as though they're fiery creatures, and of course they're not. But the legend has it that the salamanders are fire elementals. Each one of the four elements has an elemental creature attached to it. And the elemental creature attached to the fire is a salamander in ceremonial magic and alchemy, precisely because of what you said. And one of the interesting things is that the salamander actually is supposed to be cold, and by his cold is able to put a fire out. The reason that salamander can survive in a fire by legend is because it's cold, and the fire can't penetrate the cold. And in Egyptian hieroglyphs, which is a totally separate system, but it's interesting because it corresponds here. In Egyptian hieroglyphs, a salamander is the symbol for a person who has died from cold, who has frozen to death, or died of exposure. Isn't that interesting? And so the salamander has actually been assigned, has been adopted like a mascot, like a team mascot. The team of fire has the salamander on its flag, and that's what we have here. So you'll see the salamander in several of the court cards of wands. The only one that doesn't have salamanders in it is the queen. That's why we didn't see it there before. So anyway, you're right. Here's the salamander. It's the element of symbol of the element of fire. And we did a big digression there, so I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, well. Okay, so I see action, and his plumes look like they're on fire, too. So that tells me that there's more activity. He's alert. I don't know. To me, he could even... I don't know if he's so much of a messenger, but he could be bringing a new energy or a message of... good tidings to me, but I don't know where I get that.
Well,
at the card.
He's certainly moving, and he's moving from one place to another, which might suggest that, although usually the function of messenger officially is usually given to the pages.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that happens with the knights are symbols of change.
Okay, yeah.
All the knights are symbols of change. Just like the queen is associated with form and giving form to things, the knights are associated with making change in things. You notice, by the way, that the kings and queens all sit on thrones. Their authority is completely established. People come to them. They sit, other people show up. All the pages are standing. The pages are all on foot, being the youngest and least authoritative. And the knights are all, in all four suits, the knights are on horseback. All the knights move and change. So every knight brings change. And in this particular case, it's a change connected with fire. So, again, look at this. This is a pretty intense guy. And it's a guy, it's masculine, and yet it's in you. Where in you? Who is this intense masculine energy filled with change and a bearer of interesting tidings?
Where is it in me?
Where is it in you? And what function does he perform in you as a rule? Maybe not just the second. What is he always like in you? What is it? Where does he come into your life? How does he function in the mix of things that makes up Devi?
I don't know, but I can relate to it.
Okay. Let me give you an interesting quality.
I can't tell you
quality.
Specifically anything right this moment.
Okay. Anybody else want to volunteer?
This is Dana, and I find the Knight of Wands when I'm doing my hospice work.
Uh-huh.
And I'm faced with a situation that I don't really know how to handle, or maybe I've never been exposed to before. But this person is there and they're dying, and I just have to get in there and take action and do the very best that I can to help them. And it's like I see him as humane, trying to do the right thing, getting in there and doing it, whether or not he knows all the right action or not.
Well, actually, you have it exactly right. The motto of the Knight of Wands is the same as the Nike motto, just do it.
Yeah, and that's how I find him in my life.
Let me go back to you, Devi, for a second, because you may find this an interesting question. How often, or what is your predilection? When action is required, do you tend to be cautious and think about what you're about to do, or do you leap in and do it?
It depends on what it is. If I have time to think about it, I have to organize all my thoughts and then take action. If it's something that's an emergency, then it might have to be done quickly. As opposed to just a reaction.
So what happens is that the Knight of Wands comes out in you when he absolutely has to, and otherwise you'd prefer not. Because the Knight of Wands does not think. There is no swords in the Knight of Wands. There is no arrow.
He's very spontaneous. And
absolutely.
I've got a... I can see that in me, probably more so when I was younger, more spontaneous, but I still see it now, but it's more of a compulsion to do something.
The knight is truly compelled to move. The knight is always moving. The knight of Wands never stands still. The Knight of Wands is restless. The Knight of Wands is intensely active. And let me see, Linda, when you look at the Knight of Wands, can you see this intensely active, intensely spontaneous, explosively, decisive, fearless character in you?
No.
That's interesting. He's there. Guarantee.
But I see a little spontaneity. Like, he's kind of looking for something.
What do you think? Looking for what?
Well, I don't know. Because of the pyramids in the background, he's kind of searching. Certain answers and mysterious secrets. I could see that.
When you speak, by the way, talk up just a little bit.
Okay.
It's hard for me to hear.
Okay, I'm too close to the phone.
Yeah, good. The interesting thing about the Knight of Wands is that, just like with all the cards, he can be expressed clearly and distinctly in a person so that they have no problem identifying themselves with the Knight of Wands, or, and this happens more often than not as people get older and more cautious, the Knight of Wands is buried, repressed, sat upon, and generally speaking, restrained, because fearless, immediate action is, something that we've learned gets us into trouble more often than not, and it's really easy to make to make mistakes. The Knight of Wands falls into every trap. The Knight of Wands puts his foot in every pothole. The Knight of Wands stumbles over every log on the road. But man, he sure does get things done. If you were a you know what the Knight of Wands is like? The thing about the Knight of Wands, which you may not know, is the Knight of Wands, all the knights in the system that we work with, is connected with the element of fire. So the knight is connected with the element of fire, and this is the suit of fire. So the Knight of Wands is fire of fire. Now there are some systems, Golden Dawn systems as well as others, that attribute the king to the element of fire. And there is something of an argument between the two basic ideas. And this is a real split. And the reason is because fire is considered to be, among the four elements, is considered to be the paternal energy, the energy of the father. Just as the water is considered to be the energy of the mother, fire is considered to be the energy of the father. And the king and queen usually are seen as father and mother, an obvious and a fairly obvious consideration. But from a certain point of view, the knight is the biological father. The knight is, if you were going to get pregnant, it's the Knight of Wands who would do it to you. The Knight of Wands is the most purely phallic, the most purely intensely sexual being in the whole tarot deck.
In the whole tarot deck?
Yep. The Knight of Wands is one magnificent phallus. he is a riding erection.
You know what I have a little trouble with, though? He seems less active than the Knight of Swords.
Yeah, the Knight of Swords is much more headlong. The Knight of Swords combines that intense phallic energy with the dedication and one-pointedness of swords, which is a whole other story. There's a reason why the Knight of Swords is shown, you know, rushing headlong more so than the knight. But, again, the symbolism of the knight is that he's a combination of these things. What happens is that the function of a father is divided into two basic parts. There is the function of the sire, the stud, the one who inseminates, the one who creates biological life. There's, in other words, the biological father. And then there is the father as a role model, the one who brings you up, the one who protects you, takes care of you, teaches you, you know, and punishes you when necessary, the one who keeps you on the straight and narrow and gives you all the instruction you need to get through life. So you have these two qualities. And as it turns out, sometimes, of course, they're combined in one person, but as an archetype, the biological energy is separated from the protective and instructive energy. They're two different things. And that's why there is this argument between the two systems as to whether the king or the knight be assigned the role of the father, because they both have fatherly qualities. But what you have here is the knight is the master of the one-night stand. The knight is always moving. When a Knight of Wands comes up in a reading, you're looking at something intense that's going to happen and pass very quickly. The Knight of Wands doesn't have any attention span at all. So he's good for, I'll tell you though, maybe a one night stand, but it'll be the best one night you ever had. So you'll remember it. The Knight of Wands is something like, I kind of think of him as the really good looking guy with the long beautiful hair and the hazel eyes and the you know, and the gold chains, who shows up in front of your house in a red convertible and says, "Come on, babe, let's go." And you'd better hop in because he's not going to wait. And he's irresistible, huh?
No, he wouldn't be irresistible.
He is so hard to. He's just oozing sex appeal. He's excitement. He's energy. He's ferocity. He's fun. Huh?
I said, "I'm there."
Right, yeah, most people are.
And I guess we've matured, Walt, or something.
Well, okay.
I have no idea.
That's not your cup of tea, is it, anymore?
Not anymore.
Well, there was a time, no?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, so sometimes, I mean, obviously, this particular quality is not attractive all the time and to everybody. But this is the quality that he is. This is what the Knight of Wands is about. And the Knight of Wands is always eager for action. He's always restless. He loves change, and he's a fire in everybody's life. Whenever the Knight of Wands shows up, everything comes to a boil. You know, and like nothing can stay calm when the Knight of Wands is around. And he's very courageous. I mean, he can find a way past any obstacle. He'll get through it. He's you know, Conan. He's, you know, he's Arnold Schwarzenegger as the great, you know, as the guy with a, with 57 guns attached to his waist, blowing his way through, you know, to an army.
Well, a quick question. Is this guy hyperactive? Like, is there any other angle about him?
Oh, absolutely. Hyperactive is a very good word for him. Because if the Knight of Wands is very evident, if the Knight of Wands is clearly present and untrammeled, if he hasn't been sat on yet, which is usually a sign of youth, then yeah, he'll be hyperactive. He'll be somebody that's always restless and always moving. And if he were a child, and we all know about hyperactive children, that could be part of it. It's not necessarily the only thing that's going on there, but it would be certainly something. And if it were an adult, it would be a person. If you got into that red convertible with a Knight of Wands, the chances are you get into trouble that night. Trouble with
literally
the police.
Literally and figuratively.
Huh?
Literally and figuratively.
Both. Absolutely. The Knight of Wands will get you in trouble with the cops. The Knight of Wands will get you in trouble with somebody's mother. The Knight of Wands will get you in trouble with friends. The Knight of Wands will get you in trouble with the owner of the club you're in, because he never abides by the rules. He doesn't give a damn about rules.
Or the old meaning of getting pregnant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He doesn't. He's just one walking energy bomb. And so he does whatever he pleases. He has no container. The thing about water and the queen is that the water of the queen puts the fire of the night in a container. This is what the intention is of the pagan, great rite is. The idea of plunging the male erection in the form of a dagger or a wand into the cup. It is the way in which the sexual energy, which is the driving energy of the universe, is contained. The woman, the feminine energy, contains the masculine energy and brings it down, cools it off, and absorbs it. This is the basic combination of male and female, of water and fire. And sometimes people describe that element, that combination of water and fire, as being incompatible. From a certain pedantic point of view, that's true. That's only true in the physical world. In the physical world, water and fire get on well in certain ways and not in other ways. But in the metaphysical world, water and fire are the way the universe is made. Everything is born of their union. And the more perfect the water and the more perfect the fire, the more intense their union. I mean, you're talking about explosiveness there. Good sex. Queen of Cups, which is water of water, and Knight of Wands, which is fire of fire, make the perfect sexual partners. They won't stay together for very long. They'd probably kill each other. But they will have a glorious time of it. So that's what you're looking at here. And the Knight of Wands is, as it says, the perfect male figure. It's the perfect male energy. It's phallic energy incarnate. So all the knights are mutable forms. And they're all the mutable aspects of the zodiac. So mutable fire is Sagittarius. And the Knight of Wands, astrological attribution, is Sagittarius. His esoteric title is Prince of the Chariot of Fire. That's part of it. Write that down. Prince of the Chariot of Fire. And Emperor of the Salamanders.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a wonderful title?
Mm-hmm.
Prince of the Chariot of Fire and Emperor of the Salamanders. My God, that doesn't tell you what he's about. And, of course, he's fire of fire in terms of elements. All fire, all spirit, all intuition, all energy, nothing else. He has no tolerance for weakness. He doesn't understand doubt at all. He just does what he has to do. Just do it. That's his motto. Good.
What is the astrological symbol again?
Sagittarius. Mutable fire. All the knights are mutable. And this is the element of fire, so he's mutable fire, which is Sagittarius. You'll notice now...
Mutable fire.
Mutable fire. Remember we
I
had...
I know you're saying beautiful fire.
No, mutable. M, with an M. I'm sorry. It's hard sometimes to hear on the phone.
Yeah.
Right. So we had cardinal. The cardinal signs are the queens. The mutable signs are the knights. Now, if somebody would be kind enough, let me see, who should I ask to do this for us? How about Marcy? I haven't even asked you anything tonight, Marcy, have I?
No, I was like counting the minutes.
Yeah, right, okay. All right, Marcy, do me a favor and turn over the king. Everybody turn over the king.
Okay.
I'll tell you this one right off. The kings are fixed signs. So the king of wands, which is fixed fire, is Leo. The astrological attribution of the king of wands is Leo. All the kings are fixed signs. So let me ask you, Marcy, you have some background in this stuff, I think, a little bit anyway. What would be the king of swords? What element is swords?
Swords are air.
It's air.
Right.
So what would be fixed air?
Air.
The king of swords is fixed.
Aries.
No, Aries is fixed fire. It's a cardinal fire. What's
so is it Aquarius?
No.
Okay, well that's why.
Actually, it is. Actually, I'll take it back. Air. It is Aquarius. Fixed air is Aquarius, right?
Okay.
Fixed air is Aquarius. So the king of swords is Aquarius.
Okay, good.
Good for you.
Astrology is not my strong.
Right. So anyway, that's the way you figure out what the astrological attributions of the cards are. If I said, for example, Kelly. If I asked you what the Queen of Cups was, what would you say? What's Cups?
Water.
What is... The Queens are cardinal. Do you know what cardinal water would be?
No, I suck at astrology.
Okay, well, that's Cancer.
Cancer?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So if you did happen to know, if you were familiar with the signs...